Blog Talk Radio.
Can Ulu prevent us from being hacked? That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. We'll be right back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people, and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number one on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on Past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. And joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shibaka, who, like me, is a member of UBU. Peace, Brother Shibaka. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, sister. I'm doing fine. Very delighted to be here. And let me say hello to the family and the listening audience. And I look forward to tonight's discussion.
I'm looking forward to it as well. So, Brother Shibaka, what led you to come up with tonight's topic? Can UBU prevent us from being hacked? Do you mean that UBU can protect our computers?
No. Thank you for the question, Sister. No, I'm not talking so much about the hardware computer. I'm more or less talking about our internal computer that's in our head, our psychology, and, of course, our physical being. But to help bring some clarity to that topic, I would like to play a clip. And this clip is from a professor from the university in Jerusalem. He's an Israeli Jew. His name is Yuval Noah Harari. And I like the listening audience to really listen to this guy because he is very scholarly. He's have lectured throughout the world, or the European world. And so you need to pay very close attention to the words that he uses, and particularly as he describes some things. So it's about a 4 to 5 minute clip, but pay close attention to the words, and then I'm going to give my interpretation after he finishes.
Okay, thank you.
And governments wanted to do it, but nobody understood biology well enough, and nobody had enough computing power and data to hack millions of people. Neither the Gestapo nor the KGB could do it. But soon, at least some corporations and governments will be able to systematically hack all the people. We humans should get used to the idea that we are no longer mysterious souls. We are now hackable animals. Data might enable human elites to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. And if indeed we succeed in hacking and engineering life, this will be not just the greatest revolution in the history of humanity. This will be the greatest revolution in biology since the very beginning of life 4 billion years ago. For 4 billion years, nothing fundamental changed in the basic rules of the game of life. All of life, for 4 billion years, dinosaurs, amoebas, tomatoes, humans, all of life was subject to the laws of natural selection and to the laws of organic biochemistry. But this is now about to change. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design and the intelligent design of our clouds, the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, these are the new driving forces of evolution. And at the same time, science may enable life, after being confined for 4 billion years to the limited realm of organic compounds, science may enable life to break out into the inorganic realm. So after 4 billion years of organic life shaped by natural selection, we are entering the era of inorganic life shaped by intelligent design. So does the data about my DNA my brain, my body, my life, does it belong to me or to some corporation or to the government or perhaps to the human collective? Humans are now hackable animals. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will, that's over. Free will, that's over. Today, we have the technology to hack human beings on a massive scale. Yeah, I mean, everything is being digitalized. Everything is being monitored. In this time of crisis, you have to follow science. It's often said that you should never allow a good crisis to go to waste because a crisis is an opportunity to also do good reforms that in normal times people will never agree to. But in a crisis, you see, we have no chance. So let's do it.
Vaccine won't help us.
The vaccine will help us, of course. It will make things, you know, more manageable.
Surveillance. People could look back in 100 years and identify the coronavirus epidemic as the moment when a new regime of surveillance took over, especially surveillance under the skin, which I think is maybe the most important development of the 21st century, is this ability to hack human beings, to go under the skin, collect biometric data, analyze it, and understand people better than they understand themselves. This, I believe, is maybe the most important event of the 21st century.
One of the features of this fourth industrial revolution is that it doesn't change.
Sister Q, what I'm about to play now, to add to that for about maybe a minute, 2 minutes at the most, is this guy who is called Klaus Schwab. He's the chairman of the World Economic Forum, and he has this forum just about every year. And the forum has consisted of a number of high-profile personalities, including Biden has been there himself, DiCaprio, the entertainer, and the premier of China. But I want you to hear what he has to say, and I'll just play about a minute of that.
Okay, thank you.
What we are doing, but it changes us. The difference of this fourth industrial revolution is change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take the genetic editing, just as an example.
All right, family, I hope you got the breast of that. And what Dr. Harari is saying is that because of the bioengineering that is going on, all right, that what is being planned, all right, is the elevation of what he calls transhumanism, where we have such a merger of and I like to call it a cyborg, and you've seen a lot of movies of this. But he says the technology exists right now, all right? The technology exists right now, and we know the technology exists right now to track you. I mean, that phone that you have right now is a perfect tracking device. I know we don't think of it as such, but it's one of the most sophisticated computers, all right, that people carry with them day in and day out, all right?
Right.
It lets you know where you are because, number one, if you got it on, you know, going from cell tower to cell tower, so the cell tower will triangulate and know your exact location. It's got your credit card and or debit card information in there. It probably has a number of your key passwords in there, particularly if you have to try to access Facebook from your phone or Twitter from your phone and a few other of those social media platforms to try to enter. So it knows everything about you. In fact, you will probably notice that you always see some type of ad popping up that's related to something that you were thinking about, that you ate, that you visited, and stuff like that. So it keeps track of you. Now, the claim that he makes about the reference to the vaccine as he sees as an opportunity, the disease he sees as an opportunity, because now with the vaccine, all right, and the administration of the vaccine, I know a lot of you have heard about, you know, contact tracing, so that, you know, even now I'm in South Florida, and I lived in Maryland. Still, I get references from Maryland telling me that I need to go and get my jab. So they know that I have not received my jab. And I say, well, how do they know I've got a jab, haven't received the jab or not? Well, they just correlate that to people that they know in my area who have received the jab. They know where I lived, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not clear on my current location just yet, all right? But they know where I lived. All right, and they know, according to their records, I have not been jabbed. So they keep sending me reminders, go get your jab, all right? And so I raise that to indicate that there are people that I consider personally dangerous, not so much dangerous that they will injure me personally, but their intent is to control the world, which may be injurious to a large number of people. And, of course, Klaus Schwab is hitting that as chair of the World Economic Forum, and Dr. Harari is one of his top and closest advisors. So let me just stop here a minute just to see if there's any questions that you might have, Sister Q.
Well, I was listening to Dr. Harari. You sound like a madman. So
he's considered a genius.
You know, they say there's a thin line between mad people and geniuses. So, you know, I don't know. So could you explain the fourth industrial revolution that Klaus Schwab mentioned in the second clip? And Harari's model for hacking people fits into that fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah, well, if you saw it, I only played a little bit of the clip. He goes on to talk about a number of things like Klaus Schwab. He says that what happens is that we do the same thing, but we change, okay? In other words, it's the changing of the person, the human being. Mm-hmm. All right. In fact, he calls them transhuman. And Harari is just essentially elevating that to saying that we're hackable. And so therefore, by saying hackable, and, you know, the most easiest thing of the hackable is just being really taken over, where you think that you are doing what you really want, but you're doing what somebody else want. And, of course, one of the easiest examples of that is the propaganda machinery that we have. All right, we know that we're being bombarded once we turn on the TV, once we look at the magazines, because those magazines only have a certain content, and they know exactly, because they have the demographic information, they have the sociological profile of the people who live in that area, so they have a very good way of collecting information. All right, and now there are some people that do put instruments or chips under their skin, all right, just so that they can easily, for convenience now, you know, everybody does this thing for convenience, you know, go through airports without necessarily showing their card in the scanning of that chip. This is mostly in Europe, but it's on its way here, and there's some testing of it here if it hasn't happened already. So, I mean, I know that for me to learn that it's in progress means it's already here, you know. And for most of you, don't think that it's going on. But you did ask a question about Schwab and Harari. So Harari is just providing, when Schwab says that we're going to change, well, this is what he's saying. We're going to be doing the same thing. You know, we'll be manufacturing things. We'll be eating. All right, we'll be consuming and using resources. All right, we'll be consuming and using energy. It's just that the resources and energy that we'll be using, all right, may be different. All right. But and Harari is the guy that is convincing Schwab of the practicalities and the possibilities of changing us while still maintaining. All right, let me play another clip, but before I do, let me go through, because you did ask about these revolutions. All right, about 500 years ago, for sake of argument, you know, mankind throughout the globe were essentially doing the same thing. We were engaged in agriculture. Now, there were some people, we had a lot of empires and kingdoms in Africa, all right, and we were engaged in trade too. All right, so we were engaged in agriculture, but we were engaged in trade. We was forging metal. We were making iron and steel and copper and a whole bunch of stuff, number one, for the weapons that we needed to defend ourselves from attacks, as well as to defend ourselves from the wild animals. All right, so we made these things, all right. Europe essentially made similar kind of things, but they suffered through a feudalism kind of period. So, as you know, we had the transatlantic slave trade in which Africans were captured and then transported here. All right, from transporting here, all right, we provided the agricultural foundation for this. And then all of a sudden, this fueled what they call the Industrial Revolution. Now, I want to put that in context a little bit because sometimes it's not understood. You know, we don't necessarily get the truth from the European. At the end of the Civil War, you'd had about 4 or 5 million so-called slaves, former slaves, all right? And at least a tenth of that population were what they call freemen, who existed almost side by side when they had the slavetocracy going on. Now, one of the ways in which a person became free, and this is extremely important if you hadn't heard from it before, all right, is that he was awarded this. He was so-called freed by his master, particularly if he was able to show his master how to improve or make money, improve his yield or make money, or engage in the development of some invention, all right, that also caused the master to increase his yield or make more money, all right? So when we look at and hear about these inventions that are popping up, you know, we know who were involved in the inventions. We just did not have the status at the time, all right, to claim ownership of that, but the European did, all right? So out of this, and particularly in the North, a number of inventions was coming about. One of the most important inventions was the utilization of steam, all right, because the steam engine, all right, powered the trains to go cross-continent, across the U.S. continent, and from there trade, all right. It also advanced other kinds of development in terms of developing industry. So that was considered the first. All right, then the second revolution came. This is on the European. This is the European explanation now. A second European claim where now the age of the monopolies, mass production. All right, in other words, you had the robber barons, as they would call, J.P. Morgan, all right, Rockefellers, and all these folks who organized large factories and made multitudes of products. All right, on a massive scale. And then from the steam, the turning of turbines, connecting wires to those turbines, flow of electricity. And that was boom, out of the age now. With the flow of electricity, usher in the third revolution, which is electronics. You have electronics going through these circuitries, all right, producing automation that powered machines, that made things, and, of course, the computer. And, of course, we heard of IBM, which was involved in that. In addition to IBM, of course, Microsoft came along, too. And, of course, Microsoft, you got your Bill Gates. Now, right. this fourth revolution, all right, is supposed now, is now to combine the electronics, all right, the computer circuitry, such that we do it now because you know that you know, when they scan you, they can scan you and have pictures of just about every organ in your body and can see very clearly without actually opening you up, doing surgery, right, exploratory surgery to see what is wrong with you. So they got machines now that can do that. They got also machines that they can, these circuitry that they can attach you to, all right? And one real good example of that is a person that has to take dialysis, all right? The examination of the blood goes through circuitry machines, right? It is filtered and all this waste that have accumulated in the blood because the person cannot throw off such from the damage to his or her liver. I mean, his or her kidneys, all right? Mm-hmm. That is doing analysis too, okay? All right, so now you got biometric material that is now can examine just about everything, your heart rate, concentration of what's in your blood, all right, any kind of thing. And if you put this in there, all right, you can begin to see a little bit more details, all right? Now, imagine yourself, all right, where you're in a world that is monitoring just about everywhere you go because you got your cell phone, all right, mm-hmm. may have a chip or two inside of you, and so therefore it is given various biometric data, all right, mm-hmm. to the cloud.
Okay.
You know, before we used to have, can you imagine now, the cloud is you know, the computer cloud, which is nothing but a network of servers, which is servers are nothing more than sophisticated computers, all right? So you got this thing which is collecting data, and then that data, all right, is being used by some folks. All right, so this is supposed to be the fourth revolution, industrial revolution, which is now basically blending of man and machine to become and make a transhuman. But let me play this other clip because this one is extremely important because I think it, and this is, again, Dr. Noah Harari speaking, and he's talking about his evolution. Listen to him now.
Okay.
Because today, data is the most important asset in the world. In ancient times, land was the most important asset. And if too much land became concentrated in too few hands, humanity split into aristocrats and commoners. Then in the modern age, in the last two centuries, machinery replaced land as the most important asset. And if too many of the machines became concentrated in too few hands, humanity split into classes, into capitalists and proletariats. Now data is replacing machinery as the most important asset. Too much of the data becomes concentrated in too few hands. Humanity will split not into classes. It will split into different species.
Did you hear what this man said? So now, in this four, he's serious. In other words, data is going to be now the most important means of production. Technically, that's mm-hmm. what he's saying. You know, he mm-hmm. says during the period, which was really the second, all right, industrial revolution, all right, you had the capitalists and you had the proletariat, all right, the workers, all right. And now this new emergence coming where now data is going to be coming such that what is going to be transformed is you're going to have different species. And guess who's going to be on top of those different species?
I wonder who.
Yeah, all right, the Europeans. I got to say this, people, all right. We often talked in the past about the evils of capitalism, and we should. All right, but I looked at capitalism in this way. I looked at capitalism as I looked at feudalism, all right, as tools that is used by the upper classes in order to sustain their power as well as profit and acquire wealth from that position. All right. And so what we see now, all right, and so, you know, it ushers in, not that, that capitalism produces the person produces capitalism, all right? And so the people right now is going to produce in what he calls this fourth industrial revolution, where we have species, and on top of that species is what I call the white supremacists, because they're the ones who are in charge right now. I mean, Klaus Schwab is a European. Harari is, well, he's a Jewish European, all right? Ashkenazans, all right? So I'm saying these folks are planning the future, and unfortunately, in their planning of the future, okay, we're not sure what's going on, and if we know. And let me give you an example. All right, I'm going to read you. This is from the American Mayors Association. All right.
Okay.
Now I want you to listen to this. Okay, this is the African American Mayors Association, which represent about 500 African-American mayors throughout the U.S. The African-American Mayor Association, all right, urges the Senate to pass the Crown Act. I'll tell you what that means again, but let me read it again. The African-American Mayors Association urges the Senate to pass the Crown Act. Now, for those of you who might not be clear on the African American Mayors Association, it is the only organization exclusively representing over 500 African American mayors across the United States. It seeks, this is what it claims, you go to their website, just put in African American Mayors Association, you know, in the search engine, and it'll take you right to their website. All right, it seeks to empower local leaders, I personally put that in quotes, for the benefit of their citizens. The role of the African American Mayors Association, all right, includes taking positions on public policies that impact the vitality and sustainability of cities, yeah, because they're falling, providing mayors with leadership and management tools, and creating a forum for member mayors to share best practices related to municipal management. Now, brothers and sisters, if you wanted to know what the Crowns Act is, it's an act in the Congress, all right, which says that to pass a piece of legislation discouraging the discrimination based on my hair.
Okay.
The crown.
Correct. Okay.
All right. So you shouldn't discriminate because if I want to go to work with, you know, braids or what have you, you shouldn't discriminate, you know, if I wear my hair, you know, fro or what have you. All right. There should be no discrimination. In other words, the people should accept me out of this, and I should just be accepted for what I am able to produce, and I should not be discriminated against about how I wear my hair. All right, so that's what the Mayors Association is pushing Congress. And this man up here is talking about how to change human beings on the globe.
Exactly.
And so I just wanted to show you where our heads are, okay,
what
the European heads is concerned about, sustaining control globally. And we're worrying about sustaining and having as much good luck with our hair and not to be discriminated because of the way we like to wear it. I just wanted to say that, you know, I thought it was rather amusing, and I had to push that up. But
yeah.
So sister, I wanted to mention that because in this fourth industrial revolution, they do see a merger of people. But on a merger of people and machines, all right, but this merger of people and machines is just not in a neighborhood. It's not in just a simple community. It's not in a single nation. It's globally, because for them to have global control, it must be global, all right? And we know some of the global application that has had due to COVID. All right, and the push out and the mandates of these so-called things called vaccines. Now, and even whether you agree with me or not about the pandemic is a plandemic, you don't have to agree with me that. What you do agree is that this has been, at least as reported on the news, a global effort, all right? And it has spearheaded globally, all right? And billions of people have been vaccinated as a consequence of that. I think a little less than half, and the holdouts are hopefully some in Asia and, of course, the African continent, in which there's only been, I guess, no more than 10%, and in the U.S., no more than 30%. Blacks have chose, 10% is those who have gotten the vaccine on the continent, and about 30, a little under 30% have gotten the vaccine here among us. 70%, a good majority have not, which is the reverse when you look at the European community. All right, so let me stop you. I know I've been saying a lot, and see if anybody want to have a question or you want to follow up. One.
Do so. I will open the phone and let them ask their question or make their comment. Caller with the last four digits 8189, please state your name, where you're calling from. Make your comment or ask.
North in the house.
Wake Forest, North Carolina.
Peace. How are you?
I'm well. Is that Brother Shabaka?
Yes
sir. How you doing, brother?
I'm well. And Sister Q, what's happening? And I got to tell you the truth, man. I think you got me a little concerned over here about having nightmares. This industrial revolutions, man, we're about to be cyborgs.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. At least that's my interpretation of the plan. And he speaks about that. He's been giving a lot of lectures throughout Europe and the U.S.
This guy, Harari,
yeah, Harari. His name is Yuval Noah Harari. All right, Yuval Noah, and Harari is spelled Harari, right? And he's a scholar, noted professor out of he teaches in Jerusalem, and he has several books out, two or three books out, and he talks about this.
Sister Q say he sounds frightened. He into some backwoods stuff. Worse than that, probably.
Well, he has.
When you started talking about the African American Men's Association, I said, okay, here we go. Now we about to find out what we into. But we into some big stuff, and then we pushing the Crown Act. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm gripping my tool for the solutions, man. Please continue. I'm listening.
Who's got it laid down? I think. All right, thank you, brother, for your comments.
Of course.
Okay, we have someone else also too.
Okay.
Okay, caller with the last four digits 7204. Please state your name, where you're calling from. Ask your comment or make your question. Make your comment. Thank you.
Good evening. How are y'all this evening? How are y'all?
I'm doing beautiful.
This is Deborah from.
I thought I recognized that voice. How you doing, sister?
I'm doing okay. Just gonna ask a question. How much money do you think was made from this jab, and how much money do you think the medical people made, the pharmaceutical government part made from this jab?
Well, according to Bobby Kennedy, in his book, they made at least upward to $100 billion thus far, but they're still making money.
Mm-hmm. And so...
Because they're coming out with the jabs and these boosters.
And where do you think they're going to put all that money at?
Well, Bill Gates is one of the funders of the pharmaceuticals, as well as the WHO, as well as the CDC, as well as the FDA. So I assume, and, you know, he's associated with Microsoft, and Microsoft has a large cloud up there, a network of computers, all right, as well as IBM. Now, IBM has been sort of like in the background, but they're still around. They've been around for a number of decades, but they're still around, okay? And so I think my personal belief is that the money goes into the development and more technological development of seeing how to interface humans with technology, you know, because in addition to wanting to control, these people are also want to live a little longer. If you read some of the books, they're talking about they want to live to 200 years.
So you see the connection, though, with the money that was made from this imitation jab thing and what you were talking about as far as what they're planning to do. I mean, that was used to fund what they're planning to do. You agree?
Yeah, I think that the plan has always been to, money is always a good vehicle to look at to see what's going on. But I like to look at money, and I also like to look who benefits from that and what kind of influence or control or leverage do they have after the accumulation. And so and right now, at some of those meetings, let me tell you who was at some of those meetings, you know, of the pictures that I saw. Your boy, Joe Biden. I saw the premier of China there, all right? Your boy Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, the Prime Minister of France. Okay.
Of course.
I mean, these are world leaders.
Of course they are. So they're gonna leave Africa all alone, right? They don't need Africa no more, right?
If we're lucky, they will leave us alone. If we're not lucky,
their intent is global, so we're not going to be left alone, all right, because still a large number of resources that is necessary to power the machinery that they have will require resources from Africa. And let me give you a very good example, all right. Elon Musk, a few months ago, talked about setting up solar panels, he says, to capture the sun. And from the sun, you know, you generate electricity, and then, you know, it's all the world after that. He talked about solar panels, all right, south of the Mediterranean Sea. Well, the only area I know that's south of the Mediterranean Sea is the continent of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Okay.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So he looked at that as a particular power source. Now, the France had looked at it decades ago when they had colonized, you know, West Africa, because Africa has a lot of falls, and as a consequence of the falls that it has, you know, the generation of power, of electricity, they wanted to connect transmission lines from West Africa to France, to power France.
Right.
That was during the De Gaulle period, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, but then, you know, you had the movement, you know, for independence, so that didn't kick off too well. But so, I mean, Africa has always been a source of potential, all right, resources in order to cap. You know, if you're talking about electronics, you know, you got to be talking about what fuels those electronics, where those parts for those electronics. And if you're talking about energy, you got to be talking about, you know, electricity, and as well, and solar. That's one that's refundable.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, you got to also talk about geothermal, which is the heat from the center, or rather below the surface, and generating up. That, again, will turn your turbines from the heat, the steam, and all that other kind of stuff. So that will produce electricity. So, I mean, Africa is a powerhouse, all right? So that's understood, all right? But I wanted to also share where I think that ULU is very crucial in its organizing to be able to counter some of this. If I may, you got sister, you did you have something else you wanted to share with us before I jump into that?
Let me see if she's still there, because I have.
Sure, you had a connection. I just wanted to make sure that you saw the connection in all of this. Okay, because
I definitely did.
You know, basically, as far as Europe is concerned, you know, their time is up. That's all I got to say. And you can
see
the connection. Their time is up.
Thank you for your comment.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you so much, sister. The time is up, but they don't want to go. They don't want to go. Let me tell you where I think ULU fits into this,
okay.
And it's extremely important because, as you know, ULU has this UBCs, ULU-based collectives. Now, for all practical purposes, for people that are vaguely familiar with it, family and listening audience, you know, it's basically a cell. You know, call it a cell, a study group, or whatever it is. All right, but it's going to be deployed, all right, in those areas where we are, all right, primarily to identify, you know, opportunities to bring together our people, all right, develop businesses, all right, and lay the foundation, all right, for being able to nurture those businesses with an African-centered model, all right, Ujamaa, family-centered, all right? Because right now, as we see, as we look around us, people engage in business, and sometimes the practices that they engage in is not necessarily honorable, and sometimes it's very destructive because we're in a system, particularly the fallen capitalistic system that we're currently in, all right, produces an array of behavior that is not conducive. And as it falls, all right, it's falling. And so what I think that Klaus Schwab is trying to do is to do a reset. And I'll tell you what I mean by a reset. If you remember Y2K, when they thought the computer was going to stop, what they did, they just turned them off and then turned them back on. All right, and then just stopped counting all over again because they thought that they only had enough clock space to go up to 2000. And then they didn't know what was going to happen because they used the clock, you know, for everything, you know, in a computer circuitry. All right, so they just turn it off, turn it back on. All right, so that was a reset. All right, reset now has got to happen, and brothers and sisters, this is why it's important. The numbers may not appear to you, but get your calculator out, and you can see where the numbers becomes important. The United States government owes $30 trillion in debt. You can't count trillion. It takes you a good while to count $30 trillion. $30 trillion in debt. All right? It spends, or rather it collects, or rather it owes $1.5 to $2 trillion on the interest alone from that $30 trillion. Okay?
Uh-huh.
$1.5 to $2 trillion that it has to cough up each year, all right, as interest on that $30 trillion. Don't worry about the trillion. Just know that you say 30 and then 1.2 and 2, all right? And you get an idea. Now, the government collects in revenue, tax revenues, only $4 trillion a year.
Mm-hmm.
Let me repeat that again. The government only collects $4 trillion, out of which $1.5 to $2 trillion is deducted to pay the interest on the $30 trillion debt.
Mm-hmm.
The government has to borrow $6 trillion in order to conduct business the following year.
Okay.
Now, they got to borrow that. They got to borrow that, you know, because they only got $2 trillion left, and they need $6 trillion. They need six, so they got to borrow $4 trillion because they only got $2 trillion less to carry over for next year. All right, to spend. All right, so they got to borrow. They need $6 trillion. Now, and this is $6 trillion, so that's $6 trillion that will be added to the $30 trillion. That's $36 trillion. Now, at some point, the government is not going to be able to pay its debt; it will default.
Right.
So what the capitalists are doing? Well, they just cut it on and cut it off and cut it back on. And so what they're trying to do now is introduce centralized digital currency. Centralized digital currency. And what has been made way for that is to entice the people to get digital currency. All right, with the success of Bitcoin and a number of other digital currency, all right, and people have heard about those, they're motivated to get these digital currencies. But keep in mind, Bitcoin and the other digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, are not centralized. They decentralized, all right? And here is where I think Hulu can come in at, because remember now, it has chapters all over the place. These chapters are organized, all right, to assess the economic value and opportunities in the area where they lie. In addition to that, to share the cultural expressions, all right, that keep us tied to the continent, which is our history. So you have that. Now, suppose we connect these centers, these UBCs, okay? Now, these, remember now, the key that the European use is the centralization of data, the centralization of data, all right? As the currency begins to fall, they want to push you towards centralized, all right, cryptocurrency, all right? In addition to that, to protect you from any mandates, all right, that's coming up, they need to have an idea of the health condition of its citizenry, all right? So therefore, it connects man and machine, or woman and machine. It connects people and machine. So you got the cryptocurrency, which is digitized. They got digital instruments, all right, that is assessing your value, all right? And while you at the same time is liquidating valuable assets that you have. Now, remember now, during COVID, over 40% of black businesses vanished. There was a transfer of wealth from those businesses and people, all right, who were lower middle class, upper middle class, who had businesses, transferred up to the oligarchs, what I call them. Okay, so there was a transfer of wealth in 2 years. Okay, all right. So consequently, all right, these people are in a precarious position. Hulu is in a must grow position. When I say a must grow, we must be able to expand and accelerate, all right, at maximum wealth, all right, these UBCs, instill with them and equip them and train them to begin to assess their environment and then begin to see how we can network, all right, and develop the currency that is necessary in that network to sustain its operation. Now, remember now, this is already on the drawing books. We're developing these UBCs. The objective of these UBCs essentially is to assess the environment in which members find themselves, okay, and then interact with that environment, you know, from an economic standpoint. Well, economics mean, and finance standpoint means you've got to, you deal in transaction. To have transactions, you've got to have, all right, at least a currency, all right? And so we need to be looking at a currency that does not tie us into the centrally controlled currency of the fourth industrial revolution, which is going to be controlled by this top layer of former capitalists in the third industrial revolution who now wants to survive in the fourth industrial revolution that they have or is organizing for. All right. And so the UBCs, because it'll be in a sense, these would be bodies. They'd be independent because, see, one UBC may not necessarily know what a UBC in Africa is doing or maybe a UBC in South America or Brazil is doing, but they will be networked together, all right, and there will be information sharing. And that information share will only be with the net. Oh, again, I'm speaking because the design is not going down. I'm giving you what I think needs to be done to offset the thing that's coming down. All right, and what's coming down is that everything there will be aimed at dehumanizing us, and our culture, family-centered culture, is what humanizes us. This family-centered culture is going to be partial and partial of any studying, all right, and interacting that we do inside of the UBCs, which is going to be in every area where we as people live and participate cooperatively together. And our objective is to develop cooperative mentality and behavior such that we can flourish and begin to lay down infrastructure of economic independence, particularly for future generations. And to do this, we cannot be hooked up into the European centralized cloud, which is controlled by the controllers who control it now. That's in a nutshell, but maybe let me stop here. Maybe some people might have a little further question, because I'm throwing out some of my ideas of how I think the UBCs is essential in our growth and sustainability as an economic entity.
There are no more hands raised, Brother Shabaka. It's almost time for us to wind up, though. So I will ask you, as we wind up this evening's discussion, Brother Shabaka, what is it that you would like to make sure the family takes with them from all this information that you've shared with us tonight?
Thank you, sister, for that, and I really appreciate that. I wish I had more time, and maybe at another date you invite me back. But I wish that they would really, really get serious about these white folks talking about taking over the control of the world and integrating computers and man and trying to elongate their lives, and that the infrastructure, or rather the foundation, all right, is such that the fourth industrial revolution will usher in the creation of new species. And one of these species is the transhuman, all right? And the implication from what I've read is that the transhuman, all right, will sort of like have reign over the human the same way the capitalists had reign over the proletariat, all right, or the kings and queens and noblemen and women, you know, have reign over the peasants. All right, this is what they're seeing. And right now, Africa is such that it has, you know, other continents have, you know, resources similar to Africa. Russia is rich, but, you know, a lot of Russia's resources is under the ice. so they got to drill under the ice. It's cold. But, you know, Africa is there. You know, you still got areas, in spite of the exploitation of hundreds of years, you still got vast resources available that is needed for a technological age. All right, and that's why I want us to take serious what they've heard. I want us to take serious of the need to develop, I don't like to rush things, but if there was ever a need for the UBCs, the development of that, and for the board, all right, and the management, you know, to begin to lay that out is now. The Europeans are not playing. They know that capitalism is dead, but they still want to stay on top, all right? And mm-hmm. so they want to stay on top, okay? And I call it white supremacy. They want to stay on top, all right, regardless of whatever system is ushered in. All right, the only system that is going to usher in to bring about any fairness is going to be what we do as humanists in our cooperative economic system, which is family-centered. And the vehicle that brings that in is going to be our UBCs, because we want to have them scattered, and we have to scatter as being independent entities and not succumb by decentralization, computers in the cloud, so-called. And that's what I have to offer and hope that the brothers and sisters, family, at least do some studying. All that stuff is on the internet. These people are very proud of what they're laying down. They're not ashamed. that's what makes it. They're not ashamed at their views. They think that these are popular views. And Europeans seem to think it because they see themselves as being on top. You understand
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, you mentioned new species in one of the South American countries. I don't remember right now which one. They just passed a law making it illegal to discriminate against the mutants that are being born as a result of these gene therapy inoculations. So they're on their way with whatever it is they are doing. So I want to thank
yeah.
you, Brother, for
quite welcome, sister.
And as always, we look forward to you coming back and sharing some more good stuff with us. We want to thank everyone who joined us tonight. And we want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.